On CBS Radio this morning, they announced that yesterday was the second busiest shopping day of the year. You may have been yourself part of Panic Saturday, or what's called Super Saturday, not to be confused with Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving. How do they know that this is the second busiest shopping day? Well, it's easy. You just tally the sales receipts and find out how much money was made. In that sense, you have to have a notion of history. But sadly, in our culture, many people get very impatient. You know, the church speaks of things in terms of centuries, and so much of our culture is about minutes. And part of that is that the media and the advertising usually like to direct our attention to the present, or at least the immediate future. And with technology and its advancements, change is so rapid that there's less and less a sense of continuity with the past. And when it comes to a story from the distant historical past, our modern perspective can make it seem at times quite unreal. And when a miraculous story about a virgin birth is included, the details can add a sense of unreality. We might be tempted to ask ourselves, did this really happen? And how can we know when it was such a long time ago? We can get caught up in the scientific assumptions that exclude even the possibility of thinking that such a thing took place at all. Now, it's important for us in this morning, on the fourth Sunday of Advent, and in a few hours we will celebrate Christmas Eve Mass here in this very cathedral, but it's important for us not to let ourselves be sidetracked by other issues before we ask the most important question. What does this actually mean? What is the message this gospel passage from Luke is trying to get across? Now, because of our devotion to Mary, and here we are in this cathedral named in honor of Our Lady of Lourdes, some might think that Mary is the central person in this gospel passage. But this account from Luke is really about what God is doing. And in order to better understand the meaning and the message for us today, we need, first of all, to look back in some of the pages of Scripture, where we'll find a series of parallel stories going all the way back to the time of Abraham. For example, his wife Sarah, well beyond her childbearing years when she conceived Isaac. We're told that Abraham had a visit from God himself, who announced the coming birth to him. Then there's Isaac's wife, Rebekah, and Rachel, the wife of Jacob, and Anna, the mother of the prophet Samuel. All came to conceive and answer to prayer. And of course, then in the New Testament, Elizabeth, the mother of John the Baptist, was beyond childbearing years at that time. And that her husband, Zechariah, was visited by an angel who told him that his wife would have a son. Again, the meaning for us. The purpose is not exclusively to glorify the mothers of these children, although they're very important, but it's to show what is happening as a result of God's plans and not our own. God is doing this, and he's determining these events and their outcome. In other words, God is actively present in human history, and the cooperation of faith-filled people is helping to bring about his will, which is essentially the heart of this gospel and this Sunday in Advent, the last Sunday. Again, it is not an example, a story primarily of Mary, though that is very important, but it is God's intervention in human affairs and about his plans coming to fruition through the cooperation of one faithful person. And the unreadiness of that person from a human point of view that prepares the way for God to do something. Now, there are other examples. Think of Moses when he's called to lead the Israelites out of Egypt. He tries to excuse himself by telling God that he's a poor speaker, but God would not hear of it. Jeremiah had the same experience. Recall the man who would become one of the greatest prophets of all time. When he was called by God, he said, "I don't know how to speak. I'm too young." And God says, "Do not say you're too young. I'm placing my words in your mouth." The message, especially for our younger people here, is that when human limitations are acknowledged, instead of limiting us, they open up the space for God to assist us in the tasks ahead. Now, God doesn't wave a magic wand over the world to accomplish his will. He wants to work through us, and he will, if we make room for him. Mary was reminded of this when the angel reassured her, "There's no room for human fear. You see, in our lives, fear concentrates on our own ability, with its limitations, our weaknesses, and our inadequacies. It paralyzes energy. Now, we need to be reminded of this because that's not what happens in the so-called real world. Most people cover up their own inadequacies. We want to pretend that everything is fine. The often used phrase, "I can handle it." Suppose Moses or Jeremiah said to God, "I can handle it." It would have been clear that they were not the right people for the task. It's our own pretended self-sufficiency that blocks God working through us. But how difficult it is to get across this message in a culture that worships self-sufficiency. Throughout salvation history, the kind of people whom God made the instruments of his purposes were those who knew they could not stand alone. Not that any of this is ever easy. Again, look to our gospel. When Mary says yes to God, she didn't realize the full implications of what she was agreeing to. She had no idea that at his birth, every door would be closed in her face, that shortly after his birth, there would be a refugee in a foreign country, and that some 33 years later, she would see her son executed as a criminal. Mary didn't just say yes once. She had to confirm that original yes many times during her life. And without her obedience to God, we would not have a Redeemer. Each of us has said yes when we undertaken whatever commitments of our life and responsibilities. And when we said that original yes, and those of you who are married know this, you took a leap in the dark, as we did in ordination. For we don't know the full implications of what we're undertaking. But it's gradually revealed to us as we go along. And we have to confirm that original yes, not once, but many times. And God will help us to remain faithful. Mary asked questions. We can ask God questions. In fact, we should, because faith is not blind. It's beyond reason, but it's not against reason. But having asked questions, the answers to which can never fully satisfy us, we have to let God be God and trust. And again, salvation history provides numerous examples of men and women who did just that. In the final hours of this Sunday before Christmas, when so many other things can distract us from what this grace-filled feast is really about, let us take a moment in all of our lives to join Mary in trusting that God's plans for us, so that we may too echo her words, "May it be done to me according to your word."